The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 287.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that I have really, really looked forward to. Not only is he a good buddy of Gerald Celente, so he's got to be a great guy, but also he is probably the only person that I know of that has actually kissed Bernie Sanders. So Judge Napolitano, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you, George. Presumably, Mrs. Sanders has kissed her husband.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
It was Bernie who kissed me. It wasn't okay. Who kissed him. I went through the whole thing, but it was after testimony that I gave before the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee against expanding the president's war-making power. Expanding under the Constitution, he has none. Senator Sanders was there expecting me to make the opposite argument. And when I made the argument that I did, he basically said, "You still employed by Fox after that performance?"
Yeah.
That introduction. That is the most poignant and humorous introduction I've had in a while. I am a fan of you and your work and your show. And I expect that a lot of my fans and friends are yours, and they're all watching us now. And I'm happy to be with you, George.
Awesome. So let's discuss an article that is very topical. One of the things that I've tried to really stress on my show are the dangers of an encroaching government when they're restricting your freedom. And I don't think, we definitely haven't seen it more in my lifetime than we have in 2020 and 2021. And I know it's something that's right at the forefront of your mind as well. So tell us about the article that you wrote that comes out this evening.
Well, I write a column every week. This particular one, which comes out at midnight tonight, so it's everywhere on Thursday morning, the 16th of September, is called Twilight's Last Gleaming.
Yeah.
And it argues that we are at the edge of freedom if we don't stop the latest incursion into our personal liberties. So when President Biden said on national television from the White House last week, these mandates that I have issued have, quote, nothing to do with personal choices or freedom. He really is betraying not only our history and our values, but the Constitution he has sworn to uphold.
Right.
I mean, this is all about choices and freedom. George, the people listening to us know this. We're talking about our human bodies. Mary Rothbard argued, and people on the right and on the left agree with this, that we own our own bodies. The government doesn't own our bodies. We decide what goes into our bodies. Every state in the union has laws that permit sick people to reject medication and health care. Well, if a sick person can reject medication and health care, a healthy person can reject an experimental drug. And we know that from the case law of all cases. It's one that most libertarians and traditionalists hate, but there are parts of it that make sense. It's Roe versus Wade, the same Roe versus Wade that allows abortion, which I condemn. To me, the fetus in the womb is a person. Another argument for another time.
Right.
There are other parts of that case that say your body is yours to determine what you want to do with it. The government cannot take your arm and stick a needle in it against your will. Now, a lot of my colleagues cite a case called Massachusetts against Jacobson, which is a 1905 opinion.
I'd love to go there because I've done that. That really, people try to use that as a case for vaccine mandates. But what
Correct.
I just said on Twitter is that actually illustrates my point why I am anti-vaccine mandate. And I want to be clear, I'm not anti-vaccine at all. I'm just anti-vaccine mandate.
I have been vaccinated, and my physician, who's been caring for my medical needs for 20 years, said, "Judge, I want you to get the third one in another month." Fine, I accept his advice. I am not in Bobby Kennedy's camp. I love and admire RFK Jr., but I am not in his camp on that. But the camp I am in, where you are, where probably everyone watching and listening to us now is, the government can't compel vaccines. You want to wear a mask, wear a mask. You want to take a vaccine, take a vaccine. Keep the government off our backs and you make your own decision in consultation with your own physician. It's your body. It's not the government's body.
Yeah.
That's essentially the argument.
And everyone has a different risk-reward profile. And that's what's missing. The nuance is what's really missing in the conversation. But I'm sorry for cutting you off. Let's go back
to Jacobs in
1905, because that's very, very crucial.
The case has been overruled twice. Once by Roe versus Wade, which says you control your own body, and once by Griswold versus Connecticut, which says that the right to privacy trumps the government's interest in your own body. These are classic privacy cases which have done away with Jacobson. And any lawyer or professor or even non-lawyer but knowledgeable. In 1905, the right to privacy had not been articulated in the federal system or even in the state courts. It has since been articulated by Griswold, which is a Connecticut case in which the state of Connecticut tried to outlaw contraception, as if the government is going to be in your bedroom. But that's what happened. This is in the early 1960s, this case. And then, of course, there's the good part of Roe versus Wade from 1973. There's no question that the federal government has no authority under the Constitution to compel a person to receive medication or a vaccine or a drug against his will. And there's no question that the state governments are without that authority. These so-called mandates were just aspirations expressed in formal legalistic language by governors and mayors, and now by the president of the United States, which purport to rely on legal authority, but they don't have the legal authority to do it. First of all, the legislative branch in the federal government, the Congress, and the state governments, whatever you call the state legislature, they write the laws. The governors and the president and the mayors don't write the laws. And every law they write has to be subject to the Constitution. And the Ninth Amendment to the Constitution guarantees you bodily integrity free from the government's intrusive eyes or needles. This is pretty basic stuff. In the past 24 hours, George, two judges, a state judge in New York City and a federal judge in Northwest New York State, have enjoined, in one case, the mayor of New York, and in the other case, the governor of New York, from mandatory vaccines, both of them based on the religious exemption. I'm happy to see that, but they should be undone totally because there's no authority to compel someone to take a vaccine, whether they have a religious objection or not. I'm an old-fashioned, traditional, pre-Vatican II, Latin mass-attending Roman Catholic. So I have a religious exemption. Suppose I were an atheist. Would I not have a religious exemption? You know, you shouldn't have to point to a specific article of faith in order to preserve the integrity of your body. The fact that you are a human being in a geographical area where the Constitution supposedly is the supreme law of the land should be enough for anyone to keep the government out of your arm, whether you believe in God or not.
Yeah. And one thing I reference Jacobson for is to illustrate one of the biggest issues I have with government-issued vaccine mandates, and that's that it puts us on a very slippery slope. And what most people don't realize when they argue for vaccine mandates by citing Jacobson is that that led to the Buck decision in 1927, which was really revolved around eugenics and gave legal authority for forced sterilizations. If you want to bring up 1905, you're just illustrating my point that can put us on a very, very slippery slope we don't want to be on.
Do you remember what Oliver Wendell Holmes, the great positivist who condemned the natural law and condemned natural rights, said in Buck against Bell?
Yeah.
Two generations of idiots is enough. I guess he wasn't including himself in that. I mean, I'm being a little sarcastic, but this is the federal government telling the states that they can force sterilize. You're right. What's next? Government is Leviathan. Leviathan is a government that recognizes no limitation whatsoever on its power. It continues to grow and seize liberty and seize property. And I'm not blaming just the Democrats. Republicans, to me, are Democrat light. We don't have a Republican Party and a Democratic Party. We have the big government party with a Republican wing and a Democratic wing. And one is more in favor of borrowing and the other is more in favor of taxing. They both like war and they both like telling us how to live. Mm-hmm. They both have produced where we are today, which is a president who can say seriously, this has nothing to do with personal liberty or personal choice, and claim that he means what he says.
What would you say to the people that push back and say, Judge, okay, I get what you're saying, but it doesn't really make any sense because we've had vaccine, aside from Jacobson, we've had vaccine mandates here in the past. It's just to send your kid to school. They have to get a measles vaccine. They have to get a polio vaccine. So how's that any different?
You don't have to send your kid to school. You can homeschool your kid, or you can have your kid, your child schooled probably in a better facility that will cost you less money, although you're going to have to pay taxes anyway under our wretched system. It's a form of coercion, which is unconstitutional. And again, there should be more than just the religious exemption. It is a violation of the First Amendment to require a person to belong to an organized religion in order to claim that exemption. Because the free exercise of religion really means the free exercise of conscience. So I, as a traditional Catholic, friends of ours as traditional Protestants, as traditional Jews, Muslims, Mormons, whatever they may be, cannot have greater liberty than those who do not believe in God. Listen, I think you're crazy for not believing in God, but I will defend to the death your right not to believe in God. The Constitution does not distinguish between believers and non-believers. Right. So the fact that it may have coerced state of New Jersey, coerced my parents to give me smallpox, chickenpox vaccines when I was four and 5 years old was just as unconstitutional then as it is today.
Okay, so when we're thinking about the principles of how the law should be set up, what are just kind of the basics? Let's start from that. So we have to have private property rights. But when people talk about rule of law, do we need to really, the basics should be that as long as I'm not infringing on your private property and your body or your well-being would be that private property, then it shouldn't really be a law. Can we start with that, or am I being way too simplistic?
No, we can start with that. You have just articulated the Rothbardian, as in Murray Rothbard, non-aggression principle. All aggression, whether physical or by some means of deception, against the person or property is illicit. Then the question becomes, what power does the government have? Jefferson said the linchpin of government power in a free society is the consent of the governed. So I would say to my constitutional law students, is there anybody here who has consented to the Constitution? Well, the answer is no. The Constitution was consented to by about 35% of adult white landowning males in 1789 when it was ratified by the 13 states. If you haven't consented to the government, then government is illicit. Question: can a government do anything morally in the absence of consent? Answer: yes. It can enforce your natural rights. It can stop somebody from interfering with your person and your property, and it can stop you from interfering with someone else's person and property, but it can't do anything else without consent. This is all theoretical. The government's not going to go away tomorrow.
Right.
But when government does something without the consent of the governed, according to Jefferson, it is the time to alter and abolish it. That's not me. That's the Declaration of Independence, the first statute enacted by Congress. So when members of Congress take an oath to the Constitution and the laws of the land, they're including the Declaration of Independence. When the government fails to protect liberty, actively assaults liberty, or no longer has the consent of the governed, it is, quote, the duty of the governed to alter or abolish it, close quote, Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, and the Declaration of Independence. So rule of law, non-aggression principle, consent of the governed. That's basically the government that existed after we won the revolution and before the Constitution, which commenced big government, before the Constitution was ratified. You know, I've spent my career defending, explaining, and when I was on the bench, interpreting the Constitution. I've come to the conclusion that functionally, it has been a disaster. It has absolutely failed to restrain the government. Formally, it still exists. We still take oaths to it. The format of the government that it created is still there. So formally, it exists. Functionally, it's been a failure. I don't think I would have voted if I were around then and knew then what I know now to have ratified the Constitution. The objectors to the Constitution, George Mason and the anti-federalists, even Jefferson himself, though he was relatively silent about it at the time, no writings he objected, were worried about three or four things. They were worried about wars without end. They were worried about obliterating the sovereignty of the states. They were worried that the central government's new bank, its own bank, would regulate economic activities. And they were worried that the central government would crush civil liberties. All four of their fears have come to pass.
Didn't Madison write about that? The report of 1800 is what I'm specifically referencing. Because people, you know, like to believe that the Supreme Court is there to, you know, make sure that the legislative branch or the executive branch is behaving by the rules of the Constitution, but they can be corrupted, and the result is what you just pointed out, that the that the Constitution in and of itself is null and void. But I believe Madison wrote in that report in 1800 that he believed that the states really had the final say-so.
All right,
go ahead.
I think you might be referring to the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, Kentucky resolution written by Madison secretly at the time, Virginia resolution written by Jefferson secretly at the time, in reaction to the Alien and Sedition Acts. Okay, brief history. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. During the Adams administration, the Federalists enacted the Alien and Sedition Acts, which, among other things, made it a crime to be critical of the government. Madison was in the House of Representatives at the time, fiercely opposed the Alien and Sedition Acts, secretly wrote in the Kentucky resolutions a statute enacted by the legislature of Kentucky, Jefferson in the Virginia resolutions, a statute enacted by the state of Virginia, saying that the federal Supreme Court is no serious check on the Congress, that only the highest court or the legislature of a state is the check on the Congress. And since the states did not give away the power when they formed the federal government to correct the federal government, they still have that power. That's known as nullification. So the Virginia resolution declared the Alien and Sedition Acts null and void in Virginia. The Kentucky resolution declared the Alien and Sedition Acts null and void in Kentucky. George, 2 weeks ago, in a midnight cryptic decision, the Supreme Court of the United States revived nullification. When the state of Texas nullified Roe versus Wade, and said abortions are unlawful after 6 weeks in Texas, not after 24 weeks. And the Supreme Court refused to disturb that. It basically said, Texas has the authority to do this. If nullification can come back, we can stop big government Leviathan in its tracks.
Right.
Whether it's the Democrats controlling the Congress or the Republicans controlling the Congress. The Republicans did as much shenanigans in the Bush years as the Democrats have done in the Obama years. It's just a different version of big government. It still saps our liberty and saps our property by taking wealth from us.
Yeah, and Tom Woods made a great point as well on the topic when he pointed out the marijuana legalization by the states.
Well, marijuana legalization, first of all, Tom Woods, a dear friend of both of ours, is the guru in the case. He's not a lawyer, but he knows more law than a lot of lawyers have practiced before. He is the guru on nullification in the country. So I bow to Tom, and of course we agree on all this, but he's right. You know, when you nullify an unpopular law, like the marijuana laws, the feds will look the other way. When you nullify a law that the big government people really like Roe versus Wade, they're not going to look the other way, and they're going to do everything they can to try and defeat nullification. But the Texas legislature, George, may have unwittingly lit a brush fire of freedom by the way it wrote that statute and the Supreme Court's refusal to dislodge the statute during the pendency of the challenge. Now, the abortion providers in Texas will still have their day in court. Whoever wins will appeal it to the Fifth Circuit. Whoever wins will appeal it to the Supreme Court. So it'll be back to the Supreme Court. But by denying the preliminary injunction, the Supreme Court is making a value judgment and saying, first of all, you're probably not going to win, abortion providers, because if you were, we would grant this preliminary injunction. And secondly, the legislature that you're challenging has the authority to do this. By saying those two things without using the word nullification, they have revived the concept of nullification here in 2021.
And that's something to be excited about.
If they stick with this, there'll be a sea change in constitutional jurisprudence. And we small government people will be shouting from the rooftops.
Yeah, that's a huge victory. That's for sure. So what would you say, let's go back to the principles we were discussing before, where the non-aggression principle. And I think some people would push back on that and say, well, you're saying that no one should have the right to inflict physical damage, let's say, on someone else. But they would say, by not getting a vaccine, you are doing that because you are potentially transmitting death to someone else. What would be your rebuttal to that?
At some point, you have to make a value judgment between the sovereignty of the individual and the power of the state. That value judgment was made by the framers when they added the Bill of Rights to the Constitution. So let's say we have a Lizzie Borden, typhoid Mary. Lizzie Borden is another case. Let's say we have a typhoid Mary. Somebody who has typhoid, who knows she has typhoid and is willingly infecting people. Well, of course, that person could be restrained. That's an assault. She is assaulting people with typhoid. But to restrain someone, you have to have a trial and prove fault. The government couldn't just grab her. It would have to prove that she was infected. Mm. If I am not infected, then the government can't restrain me because I might be harming someone. We don't punish people in America because of what they might do. We only punish them because of what they have done and what we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty to a jury. That's called due process.
Okay, then this might be a redundant question, but I wanted to ask it just so we could give the viewers and listeners some... I don't want to say ammunition. I think that's too strong of a word, but some rebuttals that they can maybe use with their Facebook friends, or I call them your friend and family member, Fred. And you know, going back to the abortion, let's say that someone is, that they are against abortion on the grounds that you are inflicting harm onto the unborn child. And again, that person that's pro-vaccine mandate is going to use that argument and say, well, then how can you be against a vaccine mandate? Because then what we're doing is the same thing, is we're preventing someone inflicting harm onto an innocent person, in this case, who is already born.
There isn't a case in the history of the United States, probably not even the history of the world, in which a person who is healthy is losing their liberty because they won't accept the government's mandate. Abortion is an entirely different case. Abortion involves two persons, and the mother cannot harm the other person. If the other person, if the infant, if the fetus were not in the mother's body, the mother would have total control over her body, as we all, unless we're carrying another person, as we all have over our own body. So I don't see the connection. Now, I'm going to put aside the RFK Jr. argument. I say this as a friend of his. I'm going to put aside the argument that the vaccines may not work, but I will say that the vaccines are experimental. The country has never permitted vaccines to be administered who have as little research behind them as these do, because everybody's yearning and begging for a solution to this, whether it's a placebo or a real one. And again, I say I have taken the vaccine. I believe that I am healthy. I behave in a healthy way, but not like I'm afraid of my own shadow or afraid of the people next to me. It just comes down at some point, George, to a value judgment. Which is the greater value, the feeling of public health or the freedom of an individual who has done no wrong to go about his or her life as he sees fit? The Constitution made that value judgment with the Fifth Amendment. And the latter is the default position. The Fifth Amendment says if government, local, state, regional, federal, wants life, liberty, or property, it has to prove fault before a jury. Can't grab you and stick a needle in your arm. You're entitled to a jury trial, and they have to prove fault. Short of that, they can't do anything to you. At that point, the rubber meets the road. At that point, we make a value judgment that your freedom to walk about free of fault and free of conviction is a greater freedom than your neighbor's freedom to know that you're vaccinated.
Okay. I'd like to go over an idea that I have had. And, I'm not an attorney. Obviously, I don't have your legal background at all. So
you make more money than most attorneys do.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
So I was looking at the Jim Crow laws. And I've used the example of Jim Crow laws when describing what is happening right now in New York City, in San Francisco, in places like New Orleans, and what might happen in other cities and maybe with airlines in the future, where they are basically the government telling businesses that it is illegal for them to serve a certain portion of the American population. And the pushback I always get, well, George, well, that's way different because you can't change the color of your skin, but you can go down and get a vaccine. I say, no. You're not looking at it the correct way. You're looking at it from the standpoint of the business to the consumer. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of the government to the business. So from that standpoint, from the government to the business, is there any difference in the Jim Crow laws that we saw decades ago and what we're seeing today in New York City?
No, there's next to no difference. In fact, what we're seeing now, George, is even worse. Earlier today on radio with my dear friend, a great libertarian, Brian Thomas, WKRC in Cincinnati. We were talking about, it is very Stalinistic for the government to do indirectly what it cannot lawfully do directly. So the government is trying to enforce its vaccine mandates, not by having police knock on your door with a nurse behind them, but by saying to your employer, if you don't make sure that your employees are vaccinated, we're going to fine you $14,000 per employee per day. Now, even General Motors would run out of cash for such fines at some point. It is unconstitutional for the government to compel a private entity to do something that the government itself can't do, number one. Number two, in America, we have what's called the business judgment rule, which basically means in matters of ordinary business judgment, what to buy, what to sell, what to charge, what to pay, the government, whether it's the legislature or the judicial branch, cannot second guess the business owner. It's private property. It's his or her or their investment. They know what's best, how to utilize that investment. So if the business judgment rule causes a restaurant to say, I'm McDonald's, I'm going to serve everybody that comes here, or I'm a fill in the blank, five-star restaurant in New York City, I'm going to serve everybody that comes here. That's the business's judgment to make, not the government's. But when the government takes a class of people and says, you can't serve them, we're blaming them for a pandemic that we can't stop. There's no authority in the Constitution for the federal government to make such a distinction. I have not heard it referred before, George, until I heard it from you just a few minutes ago as a modern day Jim Crow law. But it is. It is basically the government picking a discrete class of people, blaming society's ills on them and punishing them. Now, of course, race is an immutable characteristic of birth, and a choice not to have a vaccine is not an immutable characteristic of birth. That does not in any way grant the government more authority to discriminate against people. I mean, could the government say to Amazon, to a supermarket, you can't sell food to people that are not vaccinated? Can the government try to starve the unvaccinated into getting vaccines? Of course not. That would be taking away life without due process of law.
But do you think they'll try? And what I mean by that, Judge, is let me clarify. I've studied a lot of history over the last 6 months, just really trying to figure out what on earth is going on in this crazy world around us. And I'm not saying that the Biden administration or any of the politicians, I'm not saying we're living in Nazi Germany right now. People misunderstand me there. But what I am saying is, if you look at how they really manipulated an entire population, is they did it by getting people to prioritize feeling over critical thinking. They did it by taking control of the media, the education, and the entertainment industry. And the third thing they did is they set up a boogeyman. And we all know who
I didn't hear what you said. They set up a
boogeyman.
They always have to have a boogeyman. And
that's right. We know who the boogeyman is.
In 1984, his name was Emmanuel Goldstein. There's always a boogeyman.
Yeah. So do you think that in an effort to gain more control and power, that the government or the powers at be are trying to set up a boogeyman today to unite a group of Americans, and that boogeyman could be the unvaccinated?
Yes. I'm sorry to say that. Yes. I have been saying in my columns, maybe for the past 3 or 4 months after the Delta variant was articulated, who knows if it exists or not, but the scientists claim it's out there, that the government would soon lose patience in its own ability to control the pandemic and find some people on whom to blame it. And it will be the unvaccinated. Now, there are heroic figures out there in the judiciary, like the two that I mentioned earlier, who might save us. But for the most part, and I don't want to be critical of my former colleagues, but for the most part, you know, judges are from the elite class of Americans, and they don't always interpret the Constitution in such a way as to recognize that liberty is the default position. And then, of course, there's the nonsense amongst the Democrats in the Senate that they want to pack the Supreme Court. Look, I don't know where any of this is going to go, but is the executive branch of the government going to try and expand its own power to control our liberty? And is it going to blame our woes on the unvaccinated and try and make life miserable for them? I think the answer is yes, and we're beginning to see it already.
Yeah.
Gerald and I are going to dinner later this week in New York City. We are vastly limited as to which restaurants we can go to because he hasn't had the vaccines. I have. I took a picture of my card. I have it on my iPhone. So wherever I go, I show it to them. It's a little demeaning, and I don't like doing it, but I want to go to these nice restaurants. What will they do next? They're going to let us eat outside. Suppose the government says, well, you can't eat outside. You can't go to any restaurant. Where will it stop? I'll tell you when all this will stop. When the government can't pay its bills, when the government has borrowed so much money and owes so much money that people stop paying taxes and it can't pay its bills. And then I think America will break off into maybe a half dozen or a dozen different smaller countries. And you can vote, as Ronald Reagan used to say, you can vote with your feet. Don't come to the Northeast. This is the most heavily regulated part of the country. Go to the Southwest or Texas or the upper Midwest, Idaho in that area, where government is a little easier and taxes are a little lighter. Could you imagine if we could avoid the federal government? Could you imagine if the federal government went out of business overnight? It would be so liberating.
Yeah. What I want to go back to the legal nitty gritty, just because it's so rare that I have an opportunity to talk to someone with your legal background. So we know that it is definitely unconstitutional for the federal government to come in and force a business to require mandates.
Yes.
Is it constitutional for a business themselves to require vaccines?
Of their customers or of their employees?
Employees.
Well, under the current state of the federal law, the answer is no. I was opposed to this legislation at the time, but now it's going to save people's freedom. And that's the Americans with Disabilities Act. So if you have some disability, and the feds are considering the unvaccinated to have a disability, the employer has to accommodate them. It is lawful for a retailer to say, I'm only going to serve the vaccinated. The retailer owns the products that he's selling. He leases, owns, or otherwise controls the retail establishment. He can decide who comes in. The Civil Rights Act of 64, in my opinion, is unconstitutional with respect to forcing you to do business with somebody you don't want to do business with. But that's another argument for...
But Judge, that's so important, why we need to be... People who are in favor of freedom need to be principled.
Yes.
They can't just say, well, I don't like this, therefore it should be illegal. We've got to stick to our principles, whether we like it or not.
Absolutely, absolutely. So who owns the supermarket? The federal government, the state government, or the company that leases the property and hires the employees and makes the investment and buys the products at wholesale and sells them at retail? Obviously, it's the latter. They can choose with whom they want to do business. So if my local supermarket in Northern New Jersey, we call them ShopRite, if my local ShopRite says, we're not letting you in because you won't wear a mask, we're not letting you in because you won't tell us whether or not you've been vaccinated, they can do that. They're not the government. Town hall can't do it. Police station can't do it. State house can't do it. The government can't do it, but a private property owner or occupier can do it.
One more question here, then I want to get onto some more kind of slippery slope stuff, which I think is just incredibly important for people to think through. You know, I was reading Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson again.
I've read it four times and that's not enough.
Yeah. But, you know, he talks about the fallacy of overlooking secondary consequences.
Yes, yes. And big government people always overlook secondary consequences.
Well, I think a lot of people in the general public are doing that as well, as far as that.
We were mostly educated by the public schools, so what do you expect?
yeah, exactly. So, but before we get there, what about drinking and driving? How is that constitutionally legal? Should we have it? Should we not have it? What is your view on that?
My view is it's none of the government's business what the content of my blood is, and they have absolutely no right to stop me and stick a needle in my blood or make me blow into a machine. If I cause an accident, that's either a crime or a tort, depending upon whether I was simply negligent or criminally negligent. But okay. Short of that, it's none of the government's business.
Great. Okay. Wanted to get your opinion on that really quick. So now let's move on to the slippery slope I was referring to. And we just recently had we're reminded, I guess, is a good way to say it, of not what happened on 9/11. And I think that's a great illustration of why we should be so concerned with the overreach that we've seen in 2020 and currently in 2021. Can you go through just not 9/11, but what happened as a result, the Patriot Act, and then how that led to the NSA, how that leads to the TSA, how that leads to FATCA, and how that's restricted our freedoms, and how that's boiled the frog slowly and got us to a point where we're even more receptive to the lockdowns and giving the government the ability to close down businesses and not allow you to walk on the beach that we saw in 2020. And therefore we have to look at, okay, what is the potential that we see even more government restriction as a result of what we're doing today that was made possible, I guess, by the Patriot Act?
Okay. Before we get there, as to 9/11, a friend of mine, Barbara Olson, who's the wife or was the wife of Ted Olson, a conservative Republican libertarian Solicitor General of the United States who understands the Constitution similarly to you and me, was killed in the second plane in New York. Hmm. If she had been allowed to carry a gun, if Todd Beamer, who led the revolt in the plane that crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, had been allowed to carry a gun,
right,
9/11 might not have happened the way we know it, because the government emasculates us and protects us from defending ourselves. Not what you asked me, but as a prelude. What you asked me is to explain how 9/11 has become the war against drugs all over again for our civil liberties.
And the war against our privacy. Yeah.
Correct. The war against drugs radically weakened the Fourth Amendment and caused state legislatures and state and federal judges to find all kinds of creative and inventive and ingenious and nefarious ways around the Fourth Amendment warrant requirement, which basically allows police to search and seize without a warrant and even without probable cause. 9/11 has done the same thing. The Patriot Act, which was posted on the House intranet, that's the internal internet, for 15 minutes before House members could vote on it. It's 315 pages long. Mm. You're speaking with probably one of the few people in the country who's read it twice. It takes about 40 or 50 hours to read because it basically amends dozens and dozens of other pre-existing laws. So you have to read the pre-existing law as well as the amendment in order to understand what it did. But the Patriot Act basically allows one FBI agent to write a search warrant for another FBI agent. It bypasses the requirement of the Fourth Amendment. That, of course, is unconstitutional since Congress is subject to the Constitution like everybody else does. The Fourth Amendment, the Patriot Act began the evisceration of the Fourth Amendment. George W. Bush took the position that because the NSA is in the military and because he was the commander in chief of the military, he could order them to do whatever he wanted and they weren't subject to the Constitution. That, of course, is absurd because all government is subject to the Constitution in the United States. The Constitution itself says it is the supreme law of the land. So he permitted the NSA to establish an apparatus using their 60,000, mainly civilian, but under the leadership of military employees, to capture every keystroke, whether we delete it or and hit send or not, every phone call and every landline and every mobile device, every piece of data transmitted on a fiber optic cable, again, without a search warrant. So privacy is totally gone. If the government wants it, they don't look at this in real time because they don't have the person power to do it. But if they wanted to, they could look at your financial records, your medical records, your legal records. Obamacare requires primary care physicians to use laptops that are connected to the Department of Health and Human Services so they can look at whatever your physician is putting into her or his laptop about what you're telling her or him about what's the cause of the headache that you have. So it has utterly destroyed privacy, utterly destroyed the Fourth Amendment. The Patriot Act even went so far as to make it a crime, a felony, for the recipient of an FBI written search warrant to tell anybody. So the FBI knocks at my door. I'm a librarian in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I'm 86 years old, I'm hard of hearing. This is a true story. She says to him, "Sonny, what do you want?" This 27-year-old FBI agent hands her a warrant to look at who has been taking out books. It's a public library, it's a government library. How can it be a crime to take a book from a government library? Nevertheless, the FBI is interested in this. She takes the self-written search warrant or the agent-written search warrant from him, hands it to her 75-year-old assistant. She's arrested for sharing, in violation of the Patriot Act, the agent-written warrant with a friend. Fast forward 3 years, a federal judge says to the prosecutors, "You're really going to prosecute this woman? She's now 89 years old." "Yes, we are." "Okay, I'm about to declare the Patriot Act unconstitutional. Are you still going to prosecute her?" "Give us a few hours to call John Ashcroft, the attorney general." They come back in the courtroom. They withdraw the indictment. This courageous judge declares that section of the Patriot Act unconstitutional anyway. So that part of it, which prohibited the recipient from telling anyone, a lawyer, a lover on the pillow, a priest in confessional, a judge in an open court, it was a crime to tell anyone that you had received one of these so-called national security letters, a euphemism for one FBI agent has authorized another one. That part has been declared unconstitutional, and the feds did not appeal that, so they don't use it anymore. But that's an example of how far and how deep and how fanatical the Republicans and some Democrats, but mainly Republicans, under George W. Bush in the weeks and months following 9/11 went to destroy our liberty. Because it's this perverse view, George, that if the government is destroying our liberty, it must be keeping us safe. Right. It presumes that the trade of "give you liberty to keep me safe" actually works. Well, A, it doesn't work. B, I can keep myself safe if you let me own my guns. And C, I am born with my liberty. It doesn't come from you, federal right. government.
Yeah, exactly right. And
I've made these arguments so many times, but I'm so passionate about it because it's all going in one direction. Jefferson predicted before he died, in the long run, if we don't have a revolution, it didn't necessarily mean bloody, every generation, government will grow and liberty will shrink.
That's right.
Yeah, Welcome to the long run.
I'm so glad you went into a deep dive on the Patriot Act there, because I think a lot of my viewers, listeners, regardless of where they are, is their position on vaccine mandates, are concerned that we may have a social score type credit system in the United States like we're seeing in China. And I just want to point out to those people that by allowing the government to do what they're doing in 2020 and 21, you are increasing the probabilities that that comes to fruition. And that meaning that social credit score, just like the Patriot Act, increases the probabilities that we one day, maybe in the near future, see that social credit score. So,
you know, the other day I had to have a young man that does digital work for me order me a new piece of hardware. He was in New York City and I was out at my farm, which is where I am now. And Amex declined the card. What the heck is this? I called them up and they said, well, Judge Napolitano, this person making the phone call was in New York City and your card was in Northwest New Jersey. How do you know where the card is? Yeah. Well, your card has a computer chip in it. So if I press a code on my computer, it tells you where the card is. But don't worry, we're not the government. Don't worry, you're not the government. The government has access to our conversation now and to your computer records, American Express. So what you learn about me, the government has about me.
Yeah.
Where is that in the Constitution? Where did we ever debate and vote to give government the power to do that?
Right. Right.
Anyway, sure. They accepted the transaction after we had this conversation. I was able to buy the iPhone. But every time I take out that card and look at it, I go, all right, Amex, you know exactly where I am.
Yeah.
You have to have a sense of humor. This stuff is dreadful, but you have to have a sense of humor or you'll lose your mind.
Yeah, you can either laugh or cry. But right. The one thing that I'm trying to do, and I want to encourage, and I know you're doing, and our good friend Gerald Celente is doing as well, and I want to encourage everyone listening to do, is stand up and fight for freedom.
Yes.
And I do not condone violence, but that doesn't mean that we cannot stand up and fight for personal liberty. So how can we do that, Judge? How can the individual listening right now stand up for their liberty?
The government can't enforce all of its laws. We know that. It just doesn't have the resources or the person power to do it. Von Mises, Hayek, Rothbard, even John Locke, Thomas Jefferson argue you have the right to avoid the government. You have the right to leave the government. You have the right to ignore the government. So if everybody in the state of Texas decided not to pay their income taxes, government would suffer a near fatal blow in its ability to enforce the laws in Texas and anywhere else. I'm not suggesting people violate the law, but where you have discretion, like a vaccine, you should exercise that discretion loudly and massively. You should challenge face to face, as Jefferson once said, shake your fist in the tyrant's face. People in the government, in whatever branch, executive, legislative, or judicial, who go along with stripping this power. We really need a new system, because Republicans are no better than Democrats at this. It almost doesn't matter who you elect, unless you elect a Ron Paul or a Thomas Massey. And I don't know if there are enough of them to get elected. This is just going to keep going on and on and on. But where you have discretion, exercise it in favor of freedom. Exercise it loudly and in groups and massively and to the faces of those who have been willing to take our freedom away.
Absolutely. All right, Judge, in the sake of time, I think we'll have to end it there. For my viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you're doing right now to fight for freedom, where can they go?
Well, they can go to judgenap.com. Judgenap.com will soon be live. We're not going to be competitors because we're friends, but judgenap.com will soon begin a four-day-a-week podcast. I have 1.25 million Facebook and Twitter followers, and I hope that theirs plus yours will watch me when they watch you. And you'll be on my show.
I can't wait. All right, Judge. Well, hopefully we get to meet someday in the very near future. Thank you again for coming on. And I hope you have an amazing day.
You as well, George. All the best.
Hi, guys. I'd like to invite each and every one of you to the next Rebel Capitalist Live event. If you are a fan of the Rebel Capitalist show, I guarantee you will love the live event. The next one is Houston, where you can meet and listen to speakers, all your favorites from the Rebel Capitalist show. People such as Dr. Ron Paul, Chris Cole, Lynn Alden, just to name a few. If you want to check out the rest of the speaker list and find out how you can attend, we'll put a link in the description below, or you can just go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. www.georgeandrew.com. This is an event where you can learn to build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. But it's not just about building wealth. It's about increasing your freedom and networking with like-minded individuals, fellow rebel capitalists. It's an amazing event. I know you'll absolutely love it. Check out rebelcapitalistlive.com, and I will see you in Houston. Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.